Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, May 20th. Three arrested after $1 million in fraudulent invoices were submitted. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. John, Cynthia, and Justin Warren were arrested following an investigation into $1 million in fraudulent invoices that were submitted to Midland County for work done by Vector Fleet Management, according to a press release from the Midland County Sheriff's Office. An investigation began last year when the county auditor's office reported a possible theft by Vector Fleet Management or employees of the company, according to the release. It was then discovered that John Warren allegedly submitted fraudulent invoices to the county and made $1.3 million worth of false charges on a company credit card. Warren was the general manager of government services at Vector since 2018, according to his LinkedIn profile. He's been charged with theft of property valued at over $300,000 and engaging in organized criminal activity. Cynthia and Justin Warren have been charged with engaging in organized criminal activity. They allegedly knowingly helped John Warren commit theft and received profits from that theft, according to the release. John and Cynthia Warren were arrested Monday, while Justin Warren was arrested Tuesday. The press release states that approximately 50 vehicles and pieces of equipment were seized in Lowndes County, Georgia, and approximately 24 vehicles and pieces of equipment were seized in Odessa as part of the investigation. The Midland County Sheriff's Office worked with the Texas Rangers, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, and the Lowndes County Sheriff's Office to conduct the investigation. Bond for John Warren was set at $1.5 million, and bond for Cynthia Warren was set at $500,000. Justin Warren's bond had not yet been set as of Wednesday afternoon. John Warren, on behalf of Vector Fleet, worked with Midland County on maintaining and upgrading the county's vehicles, according to county documents. Miss Casey's Wonderland is now open year-round. The story was written by J.C. Lewis. Midlanders no longer have to wait until September to enjoy Miss Casey's Wonderland. The store, known for its Christmas decor selection, has expanded its offerings and is remaining open year-round. Co-owner Becky McCraney said she and her sister and co-owner Kathy Harrison made the decision after the introduction of the store's website and after seeing how COVID-19 impacted the business. McCraney and Harrison opened the store 37 years ago. Quote, "Our customer base loved what we created for Halloween, fall, and Christmas, and they would come to Valentine's Day and Easter and wanted displays on their doors," she said. "We started doing more door decor that was seasonal. Customers wanted access to a couple of our lines, the Round Top Collection and Cotton Colors, which people can change out seasonally with charms and attachments and which are interchangeable on more permanent decor pieces," end quote. Miss Casey's Wonderland is the only authorized dealer for Cotton Colors in Midland and has one of the largest Round Top collections in the United States, McCraney said. The pandemic also provided an opportunity for people to use Miss Casey's Wonderland website. Quote, "The website really took off because people were stuck at home, especially women, who wanted to shop and decorate," she said. "This really opened the door for people across the country who specifically decorate for every single season to find us," end quote. The store has also started shipping customized wreaths, teardrops, and other door decor that has been created in the store. Quote, People think that we get stuff already made, but actually our designers create all our Miss Casey's creations, she said. We have already started on Christmas creations for this year, end quote. McCraney is currently arranging new Christmas displays, and the store has put out more decor that has been held up in shipping delays during the pandemic. Quote, we received a lot of late shipments last year because of COVID, so we just kept and stored the merchandise to bring out this year, she said. Even this year's, we're being faced with late shipments, but now I can start working with stuff from last year's late shipments, end quote. A Christmas in July is a possibility for this summer because the store wasn't able to host their usual event with cookies, hot cocoa, and Santa last December. Quote, my daughter asked, why don't we have a Christmas in July this year? McCraney said. We could have Santa come out in a Hawaiian shirt, get some big blow-ups, and let kids have their picture taken with him. We could bring out a hot dog man and have a snow cone truck. I believe that we are going to do something, end quote. The pandemic also changed how people view their homes, McCraney said. Quote, people started to look at their homes differently because they were stuck in them, she said. People were creating office spaces and decorating their areas because they were showing people their homes over Zoom. I think it made people more aware of their surroundings, end quote. On the holiday side of the business, McCraney said they see sales increase for a certain holiday about a month to 6 weeks before the holiday people are going to decorate for. Miss Casey's has graduation, Memorial Day, 4th of July, summer and spring decor out on display, alongside the usual Halloween and Christmas items. McCraney added that medals and animal print will be popular this year, and the store will have a display with every shade of metal, gold, platinum, silver, bronze, and copper, with touches of leopard print, blue, and pink. Quote, all of our walls are movable, and we change them with wallpaper, paint, and colors, she said. Kathy comes in, and she lays in the background to hang new chandeliers, put up mirrors, and we have mantelpieces and furniture in the nooks, end quote. McCraney said that the store has participated in the Low Street Markets downtown, Pop Spots, and she is looking at hosting a pop-up at the store with other small businesses. They have been trying to get the word out that Miss Casey's is finally open year-round for Midlanders to enjoy. Where do we stand with masks in Midland? The story was written by Stuart Doreen and J.C. Lewis. On Wednesday, Midland College became the latest entity to change its COVID protocol. In conjunction with CDC guidance effective June 1st, Midland College will not require masks in any of its locations, according to a statement from the college. Midland College officials also stated that individuals who are not fully vaccinated are encouraged to wear a mask in order to mitigate the effects of COVID. Quote, Midland College also fully supports anyone who chooses to wear a mask due to personal preference, according to the statement. Midland College's announcement on Wednesday followed the news Tuesday that Governor Greg Abbott issued an executive order that bans government entities in Texas, like cities, counties, and school districts, from mandating masks in the fight against the coronavirus pandemic. Midland College will continue to follow safety protocols and limit the number of people gathering in areas such as auditoriums, lecture halls, and community meeting rooms, according to the news release. The tennis courts on the Midland College main campus will be open to the public beginning June 1st. The following is where other entities and selected retail stores stand on masks. Midland Memorial Hospital. Masks are currently required in all Midland health facilities. Abbott's executive order exempts state-supported living centers, government-owned or operated hospitals, Texas Department of Criminal Justice Facilities, Texas Juvenile Justice Department Facilities, and county and municipal jails. Midland ISD. The district on Monday decided that masks would become optional for students, staff, and visitors beginning May 24th. Midland County Courthouse. Masks are highly encouraged, but the Texas Supreme Court allows judges to have the final say in their respective courtrooms. Midland County Annex. Masks are highly encouraged. City of Midland. Masks are recommended but not required inside Midland City Hall, at meetings, and at other city events. At the Bush Convention Center, signage posted throughout the building encouraging people to follow COVID-19 safety guidelines and recommendations, according to the center's website. It is the responsibility of the client or event host to enforce any special requirements outside of those mandated by the governor's office for their event. Horseshoe. Masks are highly encouraged. HEB. Mask use at its stores will remain, according to the most recent news release in early March, on HEB's website. Signs requiring mask use will remain posted at entrances, and we will continue to make announcements in store. HEB will continue to expect shoppers to wear masks while in its stores. Walmart and Sam's Club. Both stores will no longer require customers or employees who are fully vaccinated to wear masks, the retailer announced last week. Customers and employees will be on the honor system. United Supermarkets. United stores and facilities in Texas will continue to require masks for associates, vendors, and customers, regardless of the mask mandate being lifted, according to the most recent news release, early March, on its website. Quote, "We will continue to look to the CDC's recommendations to determine our safety practices and look forward to the vaccine being readily available not only to frontline teams, but to the general population in the coming months." End quote. Simon Mall. The owners of Midland Park Mall will continue to require shoppers and employees to wear masks at its 21 shopping centers in the state, according to the Dallas Morning News. Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Masks became optional effective May 16th if allowed by the tour or event for said event held at the center. Patrons who are immune-compromised or feel they could be at risk are encouraged to continue the use of a face covering. Many tours or events may choose reasons of their own to continue to ask patrons to wear a mask when inside the facility. This information will be released at the time tickets go on sale so that patrons can choose their attendance. Socially distanced seating will remain for all events through July. Starting August 1st, events will go to full capacity and will be mask optional if the event allows. Midland Rockhounds. Team officials said there is no policy for baseball games at Momentum Bank Ballpark at the Scarborough Sports Complex. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter Telegram on Thursday, May 20th. Eddie Hickman. The family of Eddie Hickman celebrated his life of 73 years on Thursday, May 20th, at the Church on the Rock South Campus in Lubbock, Texas. His family hosted a time of fellowship and remembrance on Wednesday, May 19th, at Lake Ridge Chapel and Memorial Designers in Lubbock. He passed away on Friday, May 14th. We invite you to visit www.memorialdesigners.net to view the live stream service, sign his virtual guestbook, and download his memorial keepsake folder to your device for printing. We also ask you to consider viewing his life tribute, a video of photographs set to his favorite music. Thomas Lynn Hoover, age 58, previously of Midland, passed on April 14th. A service will be held May 21st at 10 a.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Chapel. Interment with military honors will immediately follow at Fairview Cemetery. Thomas is survived by his sons, Thomas Hoover and Matthew Hoover. Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home is honored to serve the Hoover family at this time. Simon Garcia Sr., age 90, of Midland, passed away on Monday, May 17th. Viewing will be held on Thursday, May 20th from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary at 7 p.m. on Thursday evening at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass is set for Friday, May 21st at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. He is survived by his wife, Rita Garcia, two sons, Simon Garcia and Sammy Garcia, two daughters, Nellie Menares and Annabelle Leal. John Renal, age 74, of Lubbock, passed away April 5th. Celebration of Life will be held at 6 p.m. Friday, May 21st, at the American Legion, 501 Veterans Air Park Lane in Midland. Survivors include his wife, Lynn Renal. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Any floral offerings should be taken to the American Legion. This is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter Telegram on May 20th. Dr. Husband is a poor patient for nurse wife. Dear Abby, my physician husband recently had a total hip replacement. Orthopedics is not his specialty. I'm a board-certified registered nurse with 40 years of experience who used to work inpatient orthopedics. He refuses to follow the surgeon's directions or mine, which are the same. He believes he knows more than all of us combined. However, when the home health nurse and physical therapist came, he accepted everything they told him. When I told him he doesn't respect my professional opinion, he didn't respond. Then I told him he had insulted my integrity, and he blew up and accused me of being crazy. History will soon repeat itself because he has to have his other hip done in a few months. I am to the point of letting the chips fall where they may and letting his outcomes, good or bad, be his sole responsibility. However, this is difficult to do as a wife and nurse. Plus, I will have to live with the fallout of any suboptimal outcomes. Your advice? Signed, Hip Service in Florida. Dear Hip Service, whether caused by a painful recovery or the drugs he's been prescribed, your husband's behavior is self-defeating. Because he ignores your and his surgeon's advice, you have no choice but to let the chips fall where they may. You can suggest and warn until you're hoarse, and your husband will continue to tune you out. The person who will have to live with the consequences is your non-compliant husband. Allow me to offer a suggestion. Hire a nurse to tend to him after the second hip replacement and stay safely out of the line of fire. The peace of mind will be worth the money. Dear Abby, I have a niece who is bipolar. She was put into rehab at the age of 20 and has been clean and sober for the last 3 years. We have always been close, but on a family visit, she asked my opinion about a job choice, and I was honest with her. Because it wasn't what she wanted to hear, she is extremely distant now. I am no longer auntie. She calls me by my first name only. Weekly calls have ceased. I have championed my niece, supported her emotionally when she had problems, and helped her out financially. Her mother says if you don't agree with her, even though she solicits your opinion, you are then against her. What's the best way to reach out to her? Due to extreme drug abuse for many years, she seems emotionally stuck at age 14. Signed, Auntie No More in California. Dear Auntie, with the clear understanding that I am not a psychotherapist, may I point out that some individuals who suffer from mental illness find it necessary to place people into two categories, friends and enemies. Disagreeing with your niece has landed you in the latter. Her mother has explained this to you, so try not to take it personally. I don't think this troubled young woman will be receptive to a reconciliation until she has found another target. In the meantime, remain open, stay cordial, and fill your life with activities that bring you joy rather than pain. I'm sure her mother will update you on your niece's progress.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, May 20th, 2021. Culture. Let's Play Railway opens this weekend at Centennial Library by J.C. Lewis. Centennial Library is hosting an interactive train exhibit this summer, and it opens Saturday. The exhibit, Let's Play Railway, will deliver educational fun for children, bring together train enthusiasts, and remind parents and caregivers of childhood memories, Community Engagement and Social Impact Coordinator Megan Buck said. The big train is modeled after the Walther's brand wooden train and railway toys. The exhibit offers interactive, educational, and pretend play opportunities for children. There are a lot of education components as far as manipulatives for little kids to really teach those kids of school readiness skills, she said. The exhibit will also aid in language development and social skills. There are a lot of opportunities with the exhibit for pretend play. The exhibit is designed for children ages 3 to 10 years old and features three large train cars that can be climbed and explored. The train is on loan from Betty Brin Children's Museum in Milwaukee. Local train enthusiast Michael Dobie will also display his model train collection, which will feature a Harry Potter train, while the exhibit is on view. The library will host Transportation Week from June 21st to the 25th. During this week, patrons will have the opportunity to meet community members with transportation-related careers and also learn about their jobs and vehicles they use while working. We have invited several people in the community whose careers center around transportation, Buck said. We will bring in firefighters with their fire engines and have law enforcement bring their vehicles. The library will be hosting a Trains, Grains, and Tomatoes with Keep Midland Beautiful at 2 p.m. July 8th. The event will focus on learning about what food grows well in the area, as well as what foods are transported into the area. The exhibit will be cleaned and disinfected daily. Centennial Library hours are 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday and 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday. The exhibit will be at the museum through August 22nd. It was made possible by the Ray Charitable Trust, Helen Greathouse Charitable Trust, and Carnegie Circle of the Midland County Public Library Foundation. Summer Reading Kickoff. This year's Summer Reading Kickoff will be 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. June 5th at Centennial Library. Community partners will have games and giveaways at the event. There will be volunteers to help kids and families sign up on the Summer Reading platform to log reading points. The Midland County Public Library Foundation has several bikes to give away to kids at the end of summer reading. Kids will be entered in a drawing to win a bike if they finish the summer reading program and reach their goals. Teens and adults can be entered into a drawing for for a new Kindle. Community calendar. Top choices this weekend: movie in the park, Croods, A New Age, 8:45 p.m. Friday at Centennial Park, West Texas Blowout, Saturday at the Horseshoe. E.T. the Extraterrestrial in Concert by Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale, 7:30 p.m. Saturday at Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Tickets are $30 to $50. Events and activities. Croods, A New Age, Friday at Centennial Park. Midland Gem and Mineral Society's Outdoor Market, 2021, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday at 602 South Main. Uncle Sam Patriotic Wreath Make and Take, 6:30 to 8 p.m. May 25th at Miss Casey's Wonderland. Tickets, $129.99. Summer Reading Kickoff, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. June 5th at Centennial Library. Basin Brews and Chews, June 5th at the Beer Garden. Keys for Hope Clay Shoot Fundraiser benefiting Gifts of Hope, June 18th at the Midland Shooters Association. Windy City Golf Tournament, 8 a.m. June 18th at Hogan Park, a senior life event. Keys for Hope Dinner and Cocktails featuring Dueling Pianos by Felix and Fingers, June 18th at the Bush Convention Center. Call Gifts of Hope at 218-8714 or visit giftsofhopetx.org for more information. Trains, Grains, and Tomatoes, 2 p.m. July 8th at Centennial Library. Community Fest, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. July 23rd and 24th at the MLK Community Center. Back to School Pop Spot, July 29th through 31st at the Bush Convention Center. Medesanime, July 20th through August 1st at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Convention Center. Nonprofits. Big Shot for CASA Clay Shoot, 8 a.m. Saturday at Jake's Clay's. Kids Farmers Market, 10 a.m. June 5th at West Texas Food Bank. Centers Classic Golf Tournament, 1 p.m. June 8th at Ranchland Hills Golf Club. Aim to End Hunger for West Texas Food Bank, 8 a.m. June 10th at Midland Shooters Association. Show of Support Clay Shoot, July 30th at Windwalker Farms. Entertainment Calendar. John Wolfe with Nolan Sotillo, 8 p.m. Thursday at Rockin' Rodeo. Riley Green, 7 p.m. Friday at La Hacienda Event Center. Cody Hibbard, 8 p.m. Friday at Rusty Bucket Barbecue and Tavern. West Texas Blowout, Saturday at the Horseshoe. E.T. the Extraterrestrial in Concert by Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale, 7:30 p.m. Saturday at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Tickets are $30 to $50. Nuestro Legado, Our Legacy 2021 Recital, 6:30 p.m. May 23rd at Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Chris Knight, 8 p.m. May 28th at the Rusty Bucket Barbecue and Tavern. Reed Southall Band, 8 p.m. June 3rd at the Rusty Bucket Barbecue and Tavern. Los Dos Carnales, 7 p.m. June 4th at La Hacienda Event Center. Robert Earl Keen, 8 p.m. June 5th at Rusty Bucket Barbecue and Tavern. Cody Johnson, June 11th at the Horseshoe. Cesar Ornelas Law Mextex Family Fiesta, June 12th at Centennial Park. Kyle Park, 8 p.m. June 12th at Rusty Bucket Barbecue and Tavern. Grupo Legitimo, 8 p.m. June 18th at La Hacienda Event Center. Josh Abbott Band, 7 p.m., June 18th, at La Hacienda Event Center. Cedric the Entertainer, 7 p.m., June 19th, at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. ZZ Top, 8 p.m., June 25th, at Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Matt Kimbrough, 8 p.m., June 26th, at Rusty Bucket Barbecue and Tavern. Colby Cooper, 8 p.m., July 2nd, at Rusty Bucket Barbecue and Tavern. Aaron Lewis, 7 p.m., July 3rd, at La Hacienda Event Center. The Bellamy Brothers, 7:30 p.m., July 17th, at Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Celebration of the Arts 2021, July 16th through 18th at the Bush Convention Center. Regular meetings and activities. Healing Yoga for People Recuperating from Cancer, 5:30 p.m. Monday at Yoga Sanctuary, 4202 Dawn Circle. Downtown Farmers Markets, 8 a.m. to noon Saturday at the Museum of the Southwest. Family Fridays, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. June 4th, June 11th, June 18th, June 25th, July 9th, July 16th, and July 23rd at the Museum of the Southwest. Parks Legado Farmers Markets, 8 a.m. to noon, June 12th, July 10th, August 14th, and September 11th at Parks Legado Town Center. Movies in the Park. Dates and locations for the movies are Croods, A New Age, Friday at Centennial Park. Sonic the Hedgehog, June 4th at Hill Park. Aladdin, June 18th at Dennis the Menace Park. Frozen 2, July 9th at C.J. Kelly Park. Onward, July 23rd at Beale Park. Trolls World Tour, August 6th at Hogan Park. Toy Story 4, August 20th at Centennial Park. Each movie will start at dusk. Don't forget your lawn chairs. For a complete list of movies in the park, please visit MidlandTexas.gov/movies. Anyone with contributions to the Community Roundup can send them to sdoreen@hearstnp.com. MCT's latest show, When Bullfrogs Sing Opera, opens for a 2-week run. What happens when a New York City socialite's country as cornbread and grits sister shows up at her penthouse for a surprise visit? Anything is possible, from deceit to hijinks, and ultimately discovering what's most important in life. Midland Community Theater is reviving the popular McLaren Festival winner, When Bullfrogs Sing Opera, for its third production of the 2021 season. The show opens Friday in the Davis Theater 1 at 2000 West Wadley and continues Fridays and Saturdays through May 22nd. This production is produced in cooperation with the Midland College Drama Department. The production takes audience members to a posh penthouse in the Upper East Side of New York City. It is there that they meet Millicent, a refined socialite, getting ready for an evening with some of her prestigious society friends. Suddenly, Millicent's lowbrow baby sister, Corrine, surprises her with a visit. Mortified that her high society friends might discover that Millicent isn't as cultured as she seems, she comes up with a plan. Corrine is a devoted and talented actress, diving deeply into her latest role. What follows is 75 minutes of shenanigans as Millicent navigates the ruse for her friends, while Corrine's contagiously positive outlook on life spreads throughout the upper crust crew, including Millicent. Newcomer to MCT, but not to the stage, Alejandra Carnero is excited to take on a new show after over a year of little to no theater. "I missed performing during the pandemic," says Carnero. "I've enjoyed the teamwork that's put in by everyone. It has been a very happy experience." Carnero, who plays the Stephanie, the dreamy-eyed daughter of Millicent's high society friends, the Kuppermans, has enjoyed the experience of working with director Jane Moore. "Jane Moore is a genius. She really wants us to work as an ensemble and think like our character would think." Moore says the show is appealing because of the classic trope of mistaken identity, but with a fun twist. She said that it's the type of comedy that we all need during these times. "We all need a laugh at this point in our lives," Moore said. "It's time for everyone to get out and have a good time and just laugh." For tickets and showtimes, visit mctmidland.org or call the MCT box office at 570-4111. Cast: Millicent, Cassie Dressel; Corrine, Pam Keel; Brian, Michael Fields; Patrick, Kevin Casey; Stephanie, Alejandro Carnero; Francis, Caroline Engelstad; Andrew, Victor Lopez.
Recognized. Congratulations, Nursing Employee of the Year 2020-2021, Alan Pitt. Photo by Jacob Ford, Odessa American. Ector County Independent School District presented Ector College Prep Success Academy's school nurse, Alan Pitt, Center, with a $250 check from Education Foundation and a gift bag from ECISD at the 2020-2021 School Nurse of the Year Surprise Celebration Wednesday morning at George H.W. Bush New Tech, Odessa. ECISD honors Nurse of the Year by Ruth Campbell, R-C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L at OAOA.com. When he arrived at George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa Wednesday morning, Alan Pitt had no idea what awaited him, but it was a pleasant surprise. He was recognized as the Ector County ISD's School Nurse of the Year. Pitt, who is based at Ector College Prep Success Academy, received a large placard with his honor on it, a $250 gift card from the Education Foundation, an ECISD swag bag, and gift cards for burritos. He plans to retire at the end of this year. Wednesday was School Nurse Appreciation Day. "I am overwhelmed," Pitt said. He added that he was very surprised and did not expect this recognition to come his way. "There are many other nurses more deserving than me, but I appreciate the honor," Pitt added. This is the end of Pitt's 20th year with the district. He has been at Ector for the past 4 years. He was at Permian High School for 14 years and split time between Burnett Elementary and Wilson and Young and Bonham Middle Schools. A native Odessan, Pitt earned his nursing degree at Odessa College. He decided on school nursing because, "At the time, my wife was studying to become a teacher. She was in the process of certification. We wanted to be able to have the same work schedule, and it was a good opportunity," Pitt said. He and his wife have 4 children and 6 grandchildren. Director of Nursing Services Becky Rhodes said Pitt is very deserving of the award. "He is quiet and calm in the chaos. He's a great mentor to our new nurses, and he's just an all-around really great nurse," Rhodes said. On the net, tinyurl.com/25spx6c8. Are continued precautions necessary after vaccine? Dear Dr. Roach, can you elaborate on how the COVID vaccine is different or inferior or maybe just not as fully tested from other vaccines? As far as I know, we do not need to continue to take precautions for polio or the Spanish flu or bird flu. Those vaccines protect us. Why the need for continued precautions for COVID after being vaccinated? W.S. Answer. The COVID vaccines are new, but the evidence is mounting that in the real world, as opposed to just studies, these vaccines are very safe and effective. Part of the continued caution in the current COVID-19 pandemic is due to the unknown duration of the effect of the vaccine, but much of the concern has to do with just how many people are infected. There is the possibility of a new variant becoming prevalent that might be more contagious, more deadly, less amenable to our therapies, or able to overcome the resistance conferred by the vaccines. We certainly hope the vaccines will continue to provide a high level of protection. It's the emergence of these variants that currently concern our public health officials the most. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536-475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475. Bueno named to new leadership role. OA News at OAOA.com. San Jacinto Principal Aaron Bueno was named an Executive Director of Leadership for Ector County ISD at a recent board workshop. Bueno will start July 1st and replace Andrea Martin, who is retiring. After an executive session, the board voted for the appointment unanimously with Board Secretary Steve Brown and Vice President Tammy Hawkins making the motion and seconding it, respectively, at Tuesday's meeting. It's an honor to be given this opportunity to serve the staff and students in ECISD, Bueno said after the meeting. The board recap said Bueno spent the past 3 years as the principal of San Jacinto Elementary School, and before that, she was the assistant principal there for 4 years. She helped lead San Jacinto from an improvement-required campus that was reconstituted to a grade of B from the Texas Education Agency. She also served 5 years in instructional coaching. Superintendent Scott Murray announced that the district would be nominating the board for the Texas School Board of the Year award. Even if we don't win, it's an honor, President Delma Abalos said. Over the next several weeks, Murray said, they will be gathering information from board members. You deserve it, Murray said. You don't often have boards that are this collaborative that allow us to do good work. On standard attire for Burnett Elementary School, the board had questions about the process, so Murray said the item will be brought back for the regular board meeting next Tuesday. Board members who were up for election May 1st were sworn in Tuesday. Running unopposed were Brown, Abalos, and Nelson Minyard. Chris Stanley won out over challenger Jesse Christensen. In the public comment part of the meeting, Javier Ruiz, president of Ector County, Texas State Teachers Association, congratulated Stanley on his re-election to the school board. He also talked about the proposed raises for employees, federal stimulus money for public school districts, and plans to use those federal dollars to improve student achievement. Ruiz said he wanted his organization to have a voice in that planning. In his opening remarks, Murray gave trustees a brief update on some of the academic progress made this year. Looking at MAP, Measure of Academic Progress, assessments from the spring semester, District-wide scores show the median growth percentile to be a 52 overall, a 57 in math, and a 47 in reading, the board recap said. He explained that the 50th percentile represents average growth during an average school experience. Approaching 60 is remarkable. Of course, he added, this was not an average year. Broken down in more detail, the recap said data shows many ECISD students grew more in the second semester than they did in the first semester, which is the opposite of typical trends. He said there is much cause for celebration, yet still a lot of work to do to ensure students have an excellent educational experience every day. Trustees received a report from the Transportation Department. A staff of more than 150 operates and maintains a fleet of 185 buses and 10 SUVs used for student and staff travel. Using money approved by voters in the 2018 tax ratification election, the department has purchased 29 new buses and has leased to own another 30, putting 59 new buses in rotation since the TRE, the recap said. ECISD buses travel more than 1.5 million miles each year, just running routes to and from school. 6,200 students, another 300,000 are covered for extracurricular activities, and the district spends about $670,000 for fuel each year. This year, due to COVID, the number of passengers on buses has been limited, and the district increased bus sanitizing and hand sanitizing for all riders. The department is recommending the addition of live GPS on buses to help with routing and with safety. If adopted, the GPS app would allow parents to confirm their child is on the bus and to be able to track the bus as it moves through town. Adding Wi-Fi to trip buses is another project the department would like to pursue in the future, the recap said. The board also heard a report on the improvement plans for Nimitz Middle School. Nimitz was rated MET standard by the state until receiving a D rating in 2018-19. Because of the pandemic, accountability ratings have been suspended since then. Showing end-of-year MAP data, student benchmark tests given three times per year, Nimitz students showed growth beyond expectations in both math and English language arts in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. The use of professional learning communities, PLCs, professional development for school leaders, and the use of the opportunity culture model are ways Nimitz is growing professionally and improving its work for students, the recap said. In his legislative update, Murray told trustees there is a process involved in applying for ESSER III funds, $55.9 million for ECISD, and ECISD has started it. He added there is still no word on ESSER II money, though it is evident that some of the money is being built into proposed bills. Murray said he would not be surprised if a final decision is not made during this legislative session. He added, HB 4545 was voted down, and he felt that was good because it contained a lot of restrictions on local decision-making, and new accountability discussions could mean look-back consequences for schools who were rated a D or F as far back as 2015. The recap said. On the net, tinyurl.com/67MFFXYR. Active shooter bill heading to governor's desk. oanews@oaoa.com. Austin. House Bill 103, filed by State Representative Brooks Landgraf, R. Odessa, to create the Texas Active Shooter Alert System, passed out of the Texas Senate with unanimous support on Wednesday. Landgraf's bill was passed by the Texas House of Representatives last month, so the measure now heads to Governor Greg Abbott's desk, the final stage of the legislative process. I'm thankful to my colleagues in the House and Senate, especially Senator Judith Zaffarini, who represents Sutherland Springs, for the unwavering support for this necessary policy, Landgraf stated in the news release. HB 103 did not receive a single negative vote at any stage of the legislative process. Texans have spoken. Our state needs the active shooter alert system required by the Lila Hernandez Act. Landgraf crafted HB 103, the Lila Hernandez Act, after working with constituents and families of victims from the August 31st, 2019 mass shooting in Odessa and Midland. Lila Hernandez, a 15-year-old Odessa High School student, was the youngest victim killed that tragic day. Lila's mother, Joanna Leifa, provided powerful testimony in support of the bill at the Texas Capitol, explaining how an active shooter alert system could have saved Lila's life. "We can never replace the lives we lost over Labor Day weekend in 2019, Landgraf stated in the release, "but we believe that fewer Texans would have perished if this system had been in place at the time, and we are hopeful implementing the alert system now will save lives in the future." HB 103 would require the Texas Department of Public Safety to develop and implement the active shooter alert system. The alerts are intended to be issued quickly via SMS text and other available communications to the public in proximity to an active shooter situation. Landgraf has described this bill as a way to save lives and prevent mass violence while protecting the constitutional rights of law-abiding Texans.
Legislators should clear way for full recovery. Skeeter Miller, Texas businessman. By the numbers, COVID-19 has had a severe economic impact in Texas. Unemployment doubled as some 600,000 jobs disappeared, erasing the paychecks and benefits upon which Texas families depended. Less visible on a spreadsheet is the downturn's impact on the communities we call home. Tens of thousands of local businesses have closed. These are the places that not only supply us with goods and services, but also help define our neighborhoods. The Texas economy is slowly making its way back, but our recovery is incomplete. The Texas unemployment rate was higher in February than it was in January, and costs have increased for many products. While there are signs of real progress, this remains a pivotal moment for those of us who operate businesses, as well as the employees and customers relying on us. The Texas legislature has the opportunity to put our economy on firmer ground and accelerate our recovery by passing Senate Bill 14 into law. Authored by Senator Brandon Creighton and sponsored by Representative Phil King, this legislation would prevent local governments from implementing regulations on private sector employment, such as mandates on paid time off, overtime, or predictive scheduling that exceed or conflict with state and federal law. This needed bill seeks to remove obstacles to growth created by a patchwork of labor and employment regulations on everything from wages to leave policies. Some of these regulations have already been found in court to be unconstitutional. As someone who employs more than 500 people across 8 restaurants in 3 Texas cities, I can attest that conflicting labor and employment regulations in different jurisdictions create confusion and staggering compliance costs. This is especially true for industries like hospitality and construction, where many of our employees work at more than one location. Further, employers have used every tool at our disposal over the last year to keep our doors open and our workers on the payroll. I used all the money I received from the Federal Paycheck Protection Program to support employees even when it didn't make financial sense for me to do so. The extra employment regulations that local governments impose on the private sector not only interfere with the free market, but they also eat away at the resources we need to keep people working. Like other employers, I believe that labor and employment regulations should provide protections for the workers upon which our businesses depend. But those regulations should be made at the state and federal levels in order to provide the consistency and predictability our economy needs. Further, these extra regulations are often unnecessary because the market provides incentives for businesses to treat employees well. One of the reasons I've been in business 45 years and kept many employees for decades is because we offer health insurance, retirement savings, interest-free loans, and other benefits that make our employees want to stay. If businesses do not treat employees well, they will lose their best talent and struggle to stay afloat. I might make potato salad for a living, but I'm smart enough to know my restaurants are only successful because of our great employees. It's these market principles that have historically made Texas the best state to start and grow a business. With those principles intact, we are inching our way back, but we cannot allow heavy-handed local regulations to obstruct this already tepid recovery. The Texas Senate has demonstrated its commitment to a strong business climate by already voting in favor of Senate Bill 14, giving it bipartisan support. Employers and employees are counting on the Texas House to join the Senate in this critical effort. The past year has been difficult enough. We need elected officials to clear away the unnecessary obstacles preventing a full recovery. It's time to get more Texans back to work and start rebuilding the businesses that our communities cherish. Skeeter Miller is the owner and president of The County Line, an Austin-based barbecue restaurant.
Ear-popping jaw pain, TMJ. Dear Dr. Roach, I have seen several doctors for my TMJ. My primary doctor and dentist, an ear, nose, and throat doctor, the dental hygienist, and also Ask Google. I am a 73-year-old female and have had this problem on the left side of my face for at least a couple of years. It started with pain in my left ear that can last for 10 minutes or all day. Now, for months, when I eat almost anything, my left jaw makes a popping sound. Anybody sitting next to me can hear it. The only thing I do is press my cheek with my hand to make it stop and continue with the meal. The popping does not hurt, but the ear aching does. My ENT said the jaw is a joint, like your knee or elbow, and it can pop and also have arthritis in it. He suggested I ask my dentist for help because he's the expert on this. I did, and he knew of nothing that would help me. My primary said the only thing she could suggest is to hold warm compresses on my cheek. Please tell me what I can do for relief, or even possibly some sort of physical therapy. VC. Answer. Your ENT specialist is quite correct that the temporomandibular joint, like any joint, may develop problems. However, the movement of the lower jaw on the upper jaw is unlike any other joint, so the TMJ may develop unique problems. TMJ problems affect up to 25% of people and are a major cause of lost work. They are more common in women, people who overuse their jaw. Tooth grinding, gum chewing are more likely to develop TMJ issues, but the factors influencing development of TMJ pain and how it is experienced by the person are complex. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536-475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.